Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we plunge into your sources for, well, those surprising facts and deeper insights. Today, we're on a really unique journey, I think, exploring human experience through legends, history, contemporary stories.
Indeed. And the sources are fascinating. We've got Ganimet Savaslara, which is Spoils of War in Turkish, Mad One English, Terabu, Vatanzes or Stateless, and also Zingara Coburg and Zingaren in Aski, Zingara's Love. Quite the collection.
Right. And our mission really is to distill the essence of these, you know, from big battles to very personal struggles, love, betrayal, freedom, basically to give you that shortcut to understanding the big human questions these stories tackle. Okay, let's dive in. So we often start our lives, or at least many creation stories do, with this kind of wonder, but also almost right away, this deep isolation. These stories really seem to highlight that fundamental need we have for connection, for understanding. It feels timeless.
It really does. And what's fascinating is how they capture this this existential isolation. It's not just about being physically alone, right? It's a deeper thing, needing someone intellectually, emotionally, to sort of validate your own experiences. Think about that first creation story in Ganimet Savaslara. Man is created 6 days, God's work. He opens his eyes, and it's fear, it's curiosity, but mainly it's loneliness.
Right.
He can figure things out, you know, find shelter, get food. He even feels pride in figuring out the world. But the text stresses this deep sadness because there's no one to share it with. No one speaks his language. It literally says only God understood his language.
Wow. That's incredibly powerful, to be the only one experiencing your own existence, finding joy, but having nowhere for it to land, really makes you think if discovery is even complete without sharing it.
Exactly. And this feeling, this primal search, it pops up elsewhere, too.
Yeah.
Like in Mad One English, we meet Mad, this boy given to the temple by the goddess Ninhursag. He's raised by Ram, grows up strong, healthy, you know, unlike many others, he survives.
So he's kind of special. In a way,
yeah,
protected.
You'd think so. But despite these unique circumstances, he has this deep sadness, always watching the door, waiting for his mother. He keeps asking Ram, will my mother come?
Oh, man.
It shows that longing for belonging, that connection, it goes way deeper than just physical safety or even, you know, divine favor.
So comfort isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
Privilege isn't enough. There's that fundamental ache for attachment. But chasing that connection, well, it can get complicated, can't it? It opens you up to disappointment, deception even.
That's a huge part of it. Look at TBU. We have Can, who forms this really deep bond with Isla. He's feeling hopeful, close. And then, bam, his world just falls apart.
What happens?
He sees her with another man, and it hits him hard. Real heartbreak. The text even mentions suicidal thoughts. It's intense.
That's brutal. And how do others react?
Well, his friend Samet tries to comfort him, but in this really cynical way. Just dismisses Isla, says she played him, like it was all a game to her.
Oof. That raises tough questions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do you know if it's real vulnerability or just being played? And how does that affect trusting again?
It really does. Ken's story shows that painful gap between, you know, the ideal we hope for and the sometimes messy reality of people. Imperfection, betrayal. The story doesn't really give easy answers. Is Samet's cynicism helpful? Or just another way to deal with the pain.
But there's hope too, right? Does connection ever work out?
Sometimes, yes. In Zingara Coburg, there's Daru, a baker girl. She feels totally overlooked, like her life isn't important enough for a story. Novels are written for others, she says.
I think a lot of people can probably relate to that feeling.
Right. But then Azad, who wants to be a writer, he sees her. He senses her sadness, calls her a unique goddess, and he decides to write her story. That act itself is incredibly validating. It tells her she matters.
That's beautiful. Someone recognizing your worth through their art. So, okay, whether it's the very first man, or Mad in the temple, or Can dealing with heartbreak, or Duru the baker, that search for connection, for meaning, is just always there, a driving force.
Absolutely. It seems fundamental to being human.
But then, what happens when these deep human needs clash with, well, the bigger forces? Power, conflict, tough moral choices leaders have to make. History and these stories are just full of conflict, power plays, and those really hard decisions leaders face and how they affect everyone else.
Yes, and the sources really get into the thick of that. It's fascinating how they show this tension, this pull between the brutal realities of power and a leader's own moral compass. Take Muhammad's early experiences in Mecca, detailed in Ganimet Savaslara. He's facing huge opposition, rejection from the powerful Quraysh tribe. They're trying to discredit him, even consulting rabbis in Medina. They treat him harshly, expel him from Taif.
So really intense opposition.
Definitely. But years later, when he comes back to Mecca, humbly, he remembers something. He recalls an angel offering to basically crush Taif between mountains for how they treated him. And he refused, chose mercy. Why? Hoping a future generation there would worship God alone.
Wow. That's playing the long game. Choosing mercy over immediate, maybe even justified, revenge.
Exactly. It makes you think about leadership, vision, and faith in the future, even when you're facing hostility right now. It's a huge moral gamble, really.
But does that always work? Can mercy be seen as weakness?
Well, that's the risk, isn't it? The story presents it as a profound choice rooted in faith. But then the same source, Ganimet Sabashlari, shows another side of conflict. The Battle of Uhud, the Muslims suffer a defeat, there's panic. People start asking, was it our fault, or is this like Allah's game?
So doubt creeps in, questioning divine will.
Right. And the narrative frames it all, victory and defeat, as a divine test. Martyrdom gets you to heaven. Destruction awaits non-believers. But it also stresses Allah's intolerance for disobedience, meaning getting into heaven isn't automatic, even for believers. You have to earn it through obedience, through sticking it out, even when things go wrong.
So earthly battles become these intense spiritual proving grounds. Obedience, suffering. They become ways to earn salvation.
Precisely. It shows how deeply people connect divine will to their own struggles.
These aren't just historical accounts, then. They're deep dives into faith responsibility, especially during wartime. And it makes you think about ideology, too. How collective belief drives conflict.
Absolutely. We see that clearly in Zingaron in Oscyates in medieval times. With Thomas Mensur leading peasant rebels against princes, he's got them chanting, death to infidels, freedom, justice, real firebrand stuff.
Total fervor.
Yeah. But even then, he tests them, asks if anyone would take a peace deal if offered. He's checking their commitment, you know. It shows how invested people become in their cause, how they see it as absolute justice, often leaving no room for compromise.
And sometimes these struggles aren't just two sides clashing, are they? They get tangled up in bigger political games.
That comes through strongly in Vedant Saz. It shifts to more modern times, discussing the Turkmen in Iraq under Saddam, but also facing pressure from Kurdish groups. The text says they chose a path of nonviolent cultural defense.
Trying to preserve their identity without fighting.
Right. But it notes this was seen by some as weakness. And then the text offers a pretty sharp critique. It critiques what it refers to as Turkish state logic, describing this logic as often seeing ethnic or cultural groups that don't fully align as, well, inherent threats to national unity.
So difference itself becomes suspect.
That's the argument presented in the text. And it goes further, suggesting that broader, what it calls imperialist strategies of divide and weaken, actually fuel these conflicts. The idea is that manipulating groups against each other serves larger geopolitical goals. And even something like the Kurdish struggle for independence could, maybe unintentionally, end up serving these bigger agendas.
It's a complex view. It reminds you how outside forces can really twist internal conflicts, maybe hiding manipulation behind words like liberation or self-defense.
Exactly. The text presents a sobering look at those layers of power.
Okay, so we've seen the grand scale, leadership, war, geopolitics, but these sources also get incredibly personal, don't they? Into battles for love, for freedom, and the price people pay for their own truth.
They really do. And this is where you see that hero archetype emerge, but also the deep costs. Take Mad again in Mad One English.
Mm-hmm.
Despite being enslaved, he's got this defiant spirit. He actually dreams of killing Kopar, this temple figurehead.
Why the goal?
To break the temple's black magic, as he sees it, and save the goddess Inanna. He believes he's a savior. Even when people tell him, you're not strong enough, you can't fight the gods, he doesn't care. He's willing to risk it all.
Like entering dangerous tunnels others won't.
Exactly. Fueled by this this magic he feels he has, possibly divinely given. It's that burden of destiny, you know.
Mm.
Believing you have this singular, dangerous mission, it must be isolating.
Hugely isolating. And then there are the more... well, maybe more relatable struggles, like Azad in Zingara Coburg. His story sounds painful.
It really is. It's about love turning into disillusionment. He moves to Coburg, gives up everything for his Zingara dream, thinking he can rescue Sofi from her troubled life.
The classic rescue fantasy, maybe?
Perhaps. But reality hits hard. He faces betrayal after betrayal, her manipulations, her lies. He's deeply disappointed.
So does he give up on her?
Ultimately, no. But his reason changes. He decides to keep helping her, not out of love anymore, but, as the text says, for humanity, like helping a sick person.
Wow. That's a huge shift. From romantic savior to almost detached compassion. redefining what helping means when love fails.
It's a powerful transformation, born from pain. But then contrast that with Zingara herself in Zingara and Inosuke. She's all about self-liberation.
Oh, so?
She writes this letter to Matthias. She says she's done being the gypsy girl. She's Zingara now. And she says he created her by opening her eyes to life.
So he was the catalyst.
Yes. But she's taking ownership. She declares, I refuse to be a slave to a man. She wants strength from him, but to transform herself. And even though she's basically locked in her castle, Matthias says, okay, I'll take you with me, knowing the danger.
That's freedom of self-definition, not just escape. Love as fuel for becoming who you want to be.
Exactly. A really powerful assertion of self. But then there's the ultimate cost.
Right. You mentioned Mad's death earlier in Vatensee.
Yes. Kramer shoots him. He dies. But the text describes a satisfied expression on his face, finding peace, finally, in his homeland.
But Rom, who cared for him?
Rom is consumed by fury. Utterly different reactions.
It just hammers home how personal the meaning of a life and its end really is. Peace for one, fury for another. Truth is subjective.
Which leads us right into that final theme, the elusive nature of truth itself and destiny.
Yeah, throughout all these stories, characters are wrestling with what's real, what's hidden, and whether they're in control of their fate or if it's already written.
And sometimes discovering the truth is dangerous. Think about Mary in Vatensee. Her investigation is super secret. Her friend Felice even jokes, you know, I'll kill you if the secret isn't world-changing. Just banter, but...
But maybe hinting at real stakes.
Maybe. Because later, Mads suspects she found out something really big, really dangerous. Secrets about HAARP, the Pentagon, maybe bioweapons. The implication is strong. That knowledge got her killed.
That taps into a deep anxiety, doesn't it? Unseen forces, powerful institutions, and the danger faced by whistleblowers or truth seekers.
Absolutely. The fear that some knowledge is just too dangerous to possess.
And sometimes the truth presented feels like an unavoidable grim destiny, like Kramer's vision of the future.
Oh, yeah. That's stark. He lays it out for Mad. Population exploding, resources dwindling, bioweapons, chemical weapons, even cosmic threats. He basically says current predictions are way too optimistic, that we're heading for unavoidable chaos. Humanity will either destroy itself or get hit by something from space.
Cheery stuff.
Not exactly. It's this bleak, fatalistic view. No room for human agency, really. Just this overwhelming vulnerability, this potential catastrophic end. It's terrifying.
And yet, even facing maybe bleak realities, some characters cling to the power of their truth, right? Like Azad, the writer.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Zingara Coburg, he's full of self-doubt writing his novel. Am I making a fool of myself? He wonders. But he has this core belief that his character, Zingara, is universal. Beyond religion, beyond nationality, that everyone could love her.
He feels a responsibility to her story.
A huge responsibility. To make her immortal, even if he isn't God, it's about the artist shaping truth, creating symbols that last. The narrative itself takes on a kind of destiny.
So the story outlives the storyteller.
That's the hope. But then you have Ram in Vatensee grappling with her own truth. She states, I am an immortal goddess.
Okay, that's a big truth.
Huge. But almost immediately, she questions its relevance now in their current situation. She even worries it could be used as a weapon against them.
Wow. So even an ancient divine truth isn't absolute. Its value, its danger, depends on the context.
That's the fascinating tension. Timeless truth versus immediate, brutal reality. How much is truth shaped by circumstance? When can it be twisted or weaponized?
It makes you think. Maybe the most important truth isn't always some grand revelation, but just finding that courage and human connection like we talked about earlier. Mm. Well, what an incredible journey through these stories, from that primal need for someone who understands your language, through the weight of leadership and war, to fighting for your own freedom, your own truth, even when it costs everything. These deep dives really show the enduring complexity of just being human.
They absolutely do. Ancient legends, modern struggles, they all act like mirrors, don't they? Reflecting our own hopes, our fears, the big questions we all face. They remind us that life is this constant balancing act, this negotiation between what the world throws at us and what we find inside ourselves.
So thinking about all this ambition, love, the search for truth, liberation, it makes you wonder what taboos in your own understanding, your own world, might be worth questioning, maybe even breaking, to find a deeper freedom or a more genuine connection.